Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. You're back at the spot. You know, the hot spot, the place where the conversations are pointed, the guests are sharp, the responses are never dull. We're going to Georgia. Yep, down south with Dr. Crystal Nelson. She is a psychiatrist, and she has created a program called Blueprint Psychiatry. Brains, mental health is affecting every one of us, whether you want to identify with it or not. Some are more severe than others. I just had a family member call me over the weekend and tell me that they had to restrain her husband on a 72-hour hold. And he is a military veteran, but he is, you know, talking about harming himself. That's the extreme. But then you have other people that fall into these pockets of hopelessness, depression, anxiety. There's a lot going on. And for those that aren't actively participating in a mental health challenge, we find it hard to deal with these other people and judge them because we don't know what to do. You can see an open wound. You can see, you know, a flesh wound. You can see somebody with cancer or Parkinson's disease, but what's going on in the mind? And what we have to realize also too, Brains, is that these people that are going through this are equally, if not more scared than we are. I had one guest on my show that told me she had 14 personalities.
My goodness.
I know. I know. I was like,
which one were you talking to? The question.
Yeah, exactly. Which one was I talking to, and which, you know, how could she distinguish among 14 different people? So we're going to talk a little bit about that and also the release of her book, her second book. So let's welcome her to the show. How are you, Dr. Crystal?
I am doing well. It's a Monday. I'm hanging in there.
I know. That's what I said, by the grace of God. Tell us a little bit about your story, your journey, your truth, and how you found yourself in the space of psychology, psychiatry, helping people.
Well, I'll start at the beginning. I wanted to be a doctor since I was 5 years old. And the only doctor that I had ever seen that existed, looked like me, was on the Cosby Show. And he was an OBGYN. So I thought I wanted to be an OBGYN. So I set out saying I'm going to be an OBGYN. And I got to medical school. And at the end of medical school is when you decide what specialty you want to choose. I did not like delivering babies in the middle of the night. At that time, I had my own child. And the mentor that I had, she said, have you ever thought about psychiatry? Because you spend a lot of time with the moms and the babies. And I didn't like my psychiatry rotation in medical school because it was too intense. And but I took her advice and I did another internship, an acting internship in psychiatry. And it was the fit for me because it was the one area of medicine where I felt like you got to talk about every piece of a person. So the mental, the physical, the spiritual, and nobody said you couldn't. And so it was really the type of doctor that I wanted to be. So from there, I went forward into psychiatry. It was interesting telling my family that I was not going to be an OBGYN. I was going to be a psychiatrist because of an African-American community. People didn't really know what a psychiatrist was.
Right.
They didn't even know that was a medical doctor. So people thought, well, what, you're not going to be a medical doctor anymore? And I was like, no, a psychiatrist is a medical doctor. And so it's taken years sometimes for even my family members to understand that I actually treat and diagnose people and I look at the whole person when I'm prescribing medications or offering therapy or whatever I may do, that we do all of that.
And that's what I wanted you to also distinguish, the difference between psychology and psychiatric doctors.
Yeah, and just the difference, basic difference, is going to be the training that the two individuals have. So a psychologist is going to have a PhD or a PsyD in psychology, and they're going to be able to offer talk therapy more so. They can diagnose as well, but they're going to do talk therapy. Psychiatrist is going to be an MD, a medical doctor, or a doctor of osteopathic medicine, a DO, and we are going to have training on diagnosing as well as being able to offer psychotherapy. Now, in the real world, not a lot of psychiatrists offering psychotherapy as well because there's so much medication management, but they are trained in doing both. So that's the main difference, that a psychiatrist can prescribe you medications should you need them.
You know, this is another thing that we talked about as far as cultural That has not been the cultural norm for us as Black Americans.
No.
We don't do that. We talk to the pastor, hallelujah. We talk to Big Mama. We talk to your girlfriend. But to actually go in and to get yourself checked out. Brains, you check your heart, your liver, your kidney, your spleen, your ovaries. You can check your brain if you're not feeling right. And it's different because it's scary, you know, getting that cocktail right. You can take an antibiotic and it's going to, you know, hit all those nerve endings until it hits the right point. But actually creating a recipe for success is what people are afraid of.
Yeah. And that's very true. That was part of how basically I got to the point of the practice that I have. And it's called Blueprint on Purpose, because we are individuals. And I think that's the scary piece. Most people don't want to show up and think that you're not going to see me and treat me as an individual. You're just going to throw a medication at me. What if that doesn't work? Or those medications don't work. When we prescribe medications here in my practice, we do genetic testing. So I'm looking at the genes your mother gave you, the genes your father gave you, which medications you can actually process in your body. So it's not a guinea pig trial and error. We're going to choose medications most appropriately and customize a plan for you. So it takes some of that scariness out of it that I think, especially in African-American culture, that we feel like we might be guinea pigged.
Right. I mean, we have been used as test dummies.
Absolutely. There's real concern.
There is. But you also prescribe something called hope. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes. So I actually did a video about this, and I called it the four letter word, because I feel like that's really what I'm doing first and foremost when I'm seeing patients. Because if you don't have hope, then everything stops. And so when people come to see me, they're at the bottom of they're on their last leg. I mean, they are hopeless at that point. And so in order to get them to buy into a medication or therapy or any type of treatment, we have to establish hope first. And hope says, okay, there's something better. And I think that if people understand, that's usually why you have depression, or why you might even be experiencing anxiety, because somewhere inside, you know, you're not meant for suffering. You know, we're not meant to just be here suffering. And so when you can't find the answer easily, that's when the hopelessness comes. But there's an answer. Sometimes we have to expand our resources and expand our reach and go and ask for the right help, especially in African-American culture. Like you said, we've been going to the pastors, and nothing wrong with that. But sometimes you need to go to the pastor and to your doctor and to your therapist and to your friends. It's a whole community that may be necessary to get you well.
And extract yourself from self-medication.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But that is definitely, you know, you're not going to take the little blue pills or pink pills and then throw back some vodka and some wine and smoke a joint. And it's a lot. And there's also a lot of alternative things that are popping up. I don't think marijuana is legal in Georgia.
But not yet. But you can smell it everywhere. So it's coming.
It's just... And that's some trickery too, Brains. That's my independent opinion. It's not the weed of old. It is genetically modified, supply and demand. But I let the doctor be the expert on that more so. But now, in addition to the marijuana, they are using these infused mushrooms.
Mm-hmm.
And they're
mm-hmm.
saying that people with severe psychiatric treatment, that need psychiatric treatment, this is something that is going on. I don't want you to speak too much in detail about that, but is that really where we're going?
Yeah, so definitely we are moving in a direction of alternative treatments. Even in my practice, we have a whole separate half of our practice that is dedicated to treatment-resistant depression. So that means patient has not done well on antidepressants, the typical medications. So we do things like magnets for the treatment of depression. We use psychedelics. So that's what you're talking about. The mushrooms, we're not quite there with the mushrooms just yet. That has to be approved a bit more. But we have psychedelic options like ketamine, where we are looking at different types
of... Pump your brakes right there. Yes. I've been hearing that coming up a lot. What is this ketamine? Because what I'm hearing that they're doing out here, because I work in, you know, in Hollywood, I'm hearing they drugging people, you know, in these parties. What is ketamine?
No. So ketamine, originally ketamine was used as a pain medication. Okay. And they were using ketamine and patients who had significant chronic pain, like cancer patients, and what they found, sort of somewhat happenstance, when in treating those patients with chronic pain, that their depression would get better. And so now we have the ability to use that for depression. And so it has a very rapid onset where it'll lift, especially people who are dealing with significant suicidal ideation. So you can get an onset with that medication within about 40 minutes to an hour, where people can
Wow.
literally feel that depression lifting. We have patients that will do that treatment. They'll come in once every 2 weeks to once a month once they're at a maintenance dose, and sometimes not even needing an antidepressant at all anymore because it will relieve the depression. So, what I will say about the marijuana, the psychedelics, the mushrooms, all of these things have a place when done properly. And it's not a one size fits all. So everybody is not going to do great with mushrooms. Everybody's not going to do great with magnets or SSRIs. That's why it's important for you to get the right help so that you can determine what's your blueprint, what is going to work for me. Because there are some of us where if we were to try to do ketamine, it's not going to work. We're not going to like how we feel. And then there are going to be some people, it puts them back at square one where they can function and get the life that they want. So I think that's where we need to be open-minded to finding our own unique wellness plan.
And, again, like you said, it's a maintenance plan. Sometimes you're going to have to get that adjusted, and that's not
Yes.
something that you can do on yourself. Do on
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's why I always tell my clients that I'll see, I commend when people are trying to feel well. So they're trying supplements or they're trying this. It's the right action. You want to feel well, but with no guidance and no expertise, because none of us can be an expert at everything. And so just from reading what you read on Google is not going to replace the expertise of, a clinician who may have been doing this for 18 years. It's not going to replace what that clinician may know and understand. So get the right resources and stop, everybody trying to be their own coach, their own doctor, their own everything.
Well,
And
they're doing a
oftentimes,
lot of trendy stuff here now. A lot of people are going to Hawaii and going to Costa Rica for ayahuasca. They are trying to do these past life regressions, or these spiritual shamans that are going through this. But you know what? I don't know. I was really going to go and do a past life regression one time as an experiment. I don't think I would do ayahuasca. But I say that is that even through therapy, through all these other alternative medicines, you're going to meet another person on the other side. You're not going to be who you were before you did the trip or before you took the
Absolutely.
medication.
Absolutely. But
What
that's a separate piece. I think when you start to get into some of that, that's the spiritual piece. And sometimes we want to exclude that
you
from wellness and treatment. So there is a spiritual part as well, a spiritual journey that people will have to take. If I want to be well completely, I can't ignore a spiritual piece. So some of those retreats that people are going on, I say, if you're at a point and place where now you're ready to explore the spiritual, then that might be for you. But know that's where you're going. You're not going just to relieve symptoms of feeling anxiety. You are going on a spiritual journey at that point. And so that's going to be another level of depth that you have to be ready for when you're engaging in those types of things.
Where are you seeing the stage of mental health? Because I tell you, I know there's days I'm 5150. And I am not, I had an anxiety attack, oh, maybe about 2 months ago. I had never had, no, this was my second one in my life. I cannot imagine what a person is going through that lives that day in and day out. The heart palpitations, the shortness of breath, the dry mouth, the brain fog, and it's different for everyone. Everyone's anxiety is not the same. Where are you seeing people overall? Just, you're going to the grocery store and somebody's going from a flicker to a flame. And then how is it best for us to reset ourselves when we feel something like this coming on?
So, I mean, it's no surprise to anybody that the state of mental health is at an all-time. I don't even think the crisis is the best word because it's so overwhelming at this point. A lot of what I think we're seeing the rise is depression and anxiety. Now, not to say that there is not a biological component to it. There is a biological component to anxiety and depression. But a lot of what we're seeing now is the society that we're in is an information overload society.
Right.
And how you feel has to do with how you think, and how you think has to do with what goes into your mind. And we think that, the things that we're doing, scrolling through social media, watching television, all of this input we are thinking that has no impact, but it has an impact. And so I think that that's where we are. We have to be a little bit more mindful of filtering some of this information that we are getting. I tell my teenagers that I will see in this practice, first thing I'll say is you have to have some breaks from social media. Social media will have you thinking that everybody looks a certain way and everyone shows up this way. That can create unnecessary stress, unnecessary anxiety, and it's not even real.
Let me tell you what happened to me, and it's happened to me more than once, and I know it's a device. I'm on the device because this is what I do. This is my career. It made me physically ill.
Yes.
Physically ill. My eyes got dry. My stomach got nauseous. I was queasy. And I kept saying, what is this? Did I eat something? And so I started to chart it. I started to write it down. Well, I was on this device like 6 hours straight. Not getting up, not taking a break. Baby, I slice and dice that now. I get up, I greet it in the morning. I check the emails. I walk away. I go clean the house or do something, come back, step away for lunch. And give myself working hours. And after a certain point, I turn it off. But it was messing with my circadian rhythm. I wasn't sleeping properly. This device is, my mother said it all the time. She said it was the devil. Now, wouldn't take it to that extreme because I look at how it kept us so connected during COVID and how many
It serves a
people were.
purpose.
It does. But just like anything else, you have to balance that. You have to balance.
Absolutely, absolutely. It serves a purpose. And you mentioned something I think is really important. You got physically ill.
Physically.
If you have unchecked mental symptoms, depression, anxiety, it will always progress to physical illness. That's why you can't separate mental health with physical health. It will progress because your feelings are your first system for the GPS telling you what direction you need to go. Hey, you need to pull back from this. You start feeling that little palpitation, then at that point, the body is trying to really pull you away once you're feeling the palpitations and the butterflies in your stomach. But you first had that little inkling, this is not good. When it comes to all of this technology and all of this input that we consume, again, we have to think it's controlling those thoughts. I always tell my clients this. I say, you think about social media, and we all use social media. So it's not just that it is completely bad, but when you think about how wealthy the people are that run the social media platforms and you don't pay for it.
Right,
So
right.
that means what are you purchasing? Because you can't have that much money. Those platforms begin to influence everything you think, you do, you feel.
I mean, popping up shoes that you want to buy,
You weren't even
places
gonna
you want to, places
buy
impulse buy, places that you
it.
want to travel, your political affiliation, what you're doing, following celebrity gossip, all the, because I'm looking at mine and I'm like, you know what? Don't want to follow that. Don't want to follow that. Don't want to do that. You have to be able to choose. And then you look at these small, naive minds that are partially developed, that are very easy to influence, manipulate, control. When you're having a conversation with someone and you're typing, you're engaging all of your senses. You're creating your imagination and you're tasting it and you're smelling it and you're excited about it. All of your senses are engaged at that point. You got to be careful. So, parents, I tell you got to go in and check what these kids are doing. You got to limit the amount of the time. And they start so young. I'm in the grocery store, 2, 3 years old, pulling out the computer. They know right to go to
Absolutely.
what they want to go to.
Absolutely. Because you can easily look at, and they've looked at studies like this where you can have, whether it's children or adults suffering with depression or anxiety, and you just take the technology away. There's a portion of them that will not have depression and anxiety in a very short period of time. Now, there are some that are going to continue, and those are the people that may need to see me, and we need to do other types of treatment. But there's a good portion of them that it clears up because, again, now they are in control of their own thoughts. You know, they're getting outside, they're getting sunlight, and not to mention the damage, good Lord, the blue light does for us and confusing. And you mentioned circadian rhythm, confusing that. Because we're staring at these screens, and that is leading to disruption in the way our natural body wants to operate. So
You're
that's just a
eating that
small
up.
thing. That's a small thing that we can all do is set some time limits on how much of this we're consuming, to improve things like depression and anxiety for sure.
Can you define, give us a definition for, because some people suffer with anxiety and depression. Can you differentiate them for us, please?
So anxiety is going to be having an overwhelming feeling or a sensation that there is danger, that there is something fearful. So physically, you can feel, butterflies in your stomach, heart palpitations, sweaty hands, sweaty feet, fingertips, toes might get numb. So there's a feeling that something bad is about to happen to me. So it is putting your body in that full-on fight or flight or freeze. So that can be all the time. And you can't identify a specific thing that you might be feeling that way about. So you're feeling that way all the time, kind of worried all the time. Depression is going to be more so where I am feeling like I am worthless. It's a hopeless, it's a sinking feeling where I'm feeling low. Doesn't matter if I'm here or not. It'd be better off if I wasn't. So very, very low energy. Sometimes can be crying and all that, but for some other people, it may look like extreme irritability. They're just irritated all the time, especially men. Men don't have a bunch of crying with their depression. They will get irritable, angry. Again, the thing, you can't pinpoint what that one thing is. You may be able to pinpoint a trigger to anxiety or depression. But it just lasts. It continues longer than a few days. You're at a few weeks where you can't pull yourself out of those states, no matter what you're trying to do. But they usually are hand in hand. So it's very rare that someone can have anxiety usually without having depression. But most people who have depression will have anxiety too.
Okay, so again, to take it to one step further, how does that fall into without, just a general overview of bipolar disorder? Do you
Yeah.
have a
So
combination of
bipolar.
both?
Yeah, good question because I like this question because I hate when I hear people throwing around bipolar like it's nothing. People say, "Oh, she's acting bipolar." Bipolar disorder is one of the most serious illnesses that we really manage in psychiatry. I say that's the cancer of psychiatry because it's very difficult to treat because the person is having highs and lows that are so extreme. So the low is so low that they are often suicidal, a lot of times leading to hospitalization or they attempted suicide. And then their highs are extreme. So an extreme high would be for a week, I'm not sleeping, I am not eating, and I don't feel hungry and I don't feel tired. I blow through my 401k. I sleep with a bunch of people. That's outside of my character. So I'm behaving in a way that is outside of my character with extreme irritability or energy. And then the opposite, where I'm so low that I am not eating, I'm not getting out of the bed, I'm not functioning. So that's bipolar disorder, not just somebody being moody, because it gets thrown around where somebody's just like, oh, she's bipolar because she had a mood swing. That's normal.
Right. Well, I had a friend that was bipolar, and when she was in a manic state,
Yes.
baby, you knew the difference.
Yes, it's very clear. You
You
won't forget it if you
and
see
it could
it.
be. And the thing about it was that she didn't want to take her medication, and that's what I find the challenge is with a lot of people that have been diagnosed. They don't want to be labeled. They don't like how they feel. Okay, but until you get that cocktail or that recipe right, you gotta feel the feels.
So let me say this, especially if there is anybody who will watch this who is dealing with bipolar disorder and has experienced exactly what you said, where they don't want to take their medication. This is fact. When someone is in mania, the upside, the high, it feels great. It feels great until the trouble comes. So not too many people are going to not want to feel that. So one of the things that's very important with the clinician that's going to manage the medications is that they don't completely flatten the person with medications. So that's why it takes time, guys, to get that little tightrope together where the person can still tap into that elevated space enough, but not dip down so low. And the medications have come a long way since we first started treating bipolar disorder, where we can get people to a nice even state where they can still tap into what we call a little bit of hypomania, not the full on, I got to go to the hospital type of mania, but they can tap into that mania where they can still feel that upside, that creative side, because people with bipolar disorder are often extremely creative, artistic people. And we want them to be able to tap into that without the dangers of the highs that can come, that can influence their life.
Yeah. And when she was down, that depression, she wouldn't get out of bed. She didn't want to talk to anybody.
Right.
And it was troubling. It was so heart-wrenching. But yes. Me and her had an understanding.
Yes. Yeah.
We had a conversation and it seemed to work, you know, rest her soul, Arlene King.
Yeah.
But again, like you said, extremely creative, very artistic. Just
oh, absolutely. I say, you know, majority of the mental, and I don't even like the term illness, but the things that we call mental illness are oftentimes the person's, it's their superpower, just not being managed. You know, if it were not for people who had what we call bipolar disorder, ADHD, there would hardly be any entertainment industry,
right.
You know, because a lot of right.
Picasso, and you look
absolutely.
At Einstein, and you know, these
absolutely. We would call those people bipolar now, schizophrenic. We would call them all these things, but we just have to figure out how to manage it. It's like I use the example often with little kids in this office. Of trying to help them to understand that it is their superpower. So I'll say, you know, if Superman were in Target and his superpower is to fly and he's flying all over Target, we wouldn't think he was a superhero. We would say, this man got to get out of Target. He's knocking everything over. But if we let him loose in the city of Atlanta out here and he could save people, now he's a superhero. Same thing when you have something like bipolar disorder. If I can allow you to tap into hypomania and you can write books, you can produce music, you can create all of these artistic things, but I protect you enough with a regimen that doesn't get you to the point of suicidal ideation or suicide attempts. Now you can be an artist for years. Now you can write books for years. And that's the goal. And we didn't always do that great in psychiatry with the way we manage things. It is much better now where we understand you don't want to zap that creativity. We want to allow people to be able to manage their superpower in the best way.
And you know, this is heart-wrenching too. You tapped on children. I have a nephew that was diagnosed with ADHD,
yes,
autism, and bipolar disorder at the age of 8.
Yeah.
And he's been incarcerated his entire life. He does not know how to function,
yeah,
as an independent contributor of society, because he has been incarcerated, he's been drugged.
Yeah.
His mother has subjected him to Munchausen syndrome, I think it is, where she would, you know, over-medicate him or assume
yeah.
it. Just, you know, and you see a lot of that, especially with African-American men, more so because they're not getting the treatment that they well deserved.
And they're misdiagnosed. A lot of times
being
misdiagnosed. So when you say someone is 8 years old, it's very difficult to give those three diagnoses to an eight-year-old because the eight-year-old is still growing, still developing. And so really when the child is that young, the goal would be to treat, you know, some of the most immediate symptoms and really figure out how to empower that child. So, you know, with someone who has ADHD, I mean, you have to really figure out how do you empower your child who has ADHD, because your ADHD child could be a pilot, a surgeon, a paramedic, something where there's pressure. That's when the ADHD functions. But if you don't understand that, then you just say, oh, that child is impulsive. They don't think through anything. I don't know pilots who need to think through a bunch of things. When a lot of them in their retirement, their wives bring them in here because they say, oh, he can't follow directions. He could never follow directions unless that adrenaline was pumping. That's why he could fly a plane. So just knowing early on, instead of looking at your child as, okay, this child is broken. Your child is not broken. You have learned something about your child, and you need to figure out, how do I manage this thing? This is something that makes my child unique, and they may not be able to function the same exact way as this one over here who might have a neurotypical brain. But there's still value in that child with the ADHD, with the autism, with the bipolar disorder. There's a lot of value. We just have to figure that out. And it can be difficult navigating.
There's a lot of variances in neurodivergency.
Absolutely, it is.
And parents don't know what you don't know. You know, this is
Right.
your first time you have a child and acting out and throwing chairs, you know, being defiant. Sometimes they want that distraction because they can't focus on the task at hand.
Yes.
And now with these classrooms being stuffed with one teacher, 20, 25 kids, she needs y'all quiet. So
Absolutely.
that she can
Right.
get through the lesson plan, because not only that is she the bulletproof vest, but she's the mass monitor, and she's, you know, she's your mama, and she's, you know, making sure that you eat all of these different variables. So step back, parents, before you're so quick to assume. Have your child diagnosed. It's all
Yes.
right. And I'm seeing more young men. Now it's being a little bit more mainstream. The young girls are being diagnosed. But before, all I was seeing was boys, 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 boys.
Girls will get missed, especially when you're talking about something like ADHD. Girls will get missed because a typical ADHD young girl, 8 to 10
Not a
years
man.
old, she's not gonna, well, she's on meds, they put the meds, but sometimes that child's not going to have the hyperactivity component. See, nobody's going to miss the boy who is can't sit down in the classroom. But the girl who is distracted and dazing out in class and just not connected, they will see her as quiet. She's not causing any trouble. So nobody will get it.
Shy,
She's
she's
shy,
introverted,
right? She's introverted because it's acceptable for a girl to be quiet and not speak up. And so sometimes our young girls are not speaking up because they are not understanding. They are struggling to focus and concentrate. A lot of young women will not get diagnosed till they get to college.
and I'm seeing that. I'm seeing a lot of, I've had several of my guests, at least five or six, that said they weren't even
Yeah.
diagnosed until they were in their 30s, 40s,
Yeah.
until they were going through testing with their children, recognizing that
Right.
these are some of the same traits that they have, why they can't focus on the job, why they're being distracted. And also, people are telling me that this can be genetic.
Yeah, so it is. I mean, almost everything that we experience on a health side can have some genetic components. But yeah, so a lot of times, exactly what you said, a parent will then realize, oh, that's me that, the doctor's describing when they're talking to my son or talking to my daughter. So if you have a child that you are noticing anything, anxiety, depression, ADHD symptoms, it is always wise as a parent to say, well, is that me? Where did that come from? And with ADHD in particular, the treatment is, I mean, it's not scary. I get people that are so fearful about it, but the treatment is can be very, very effective. And to empower a child really early on with knowing how to manage their own mind, I mean, there's really no limitation on what the kid would be able to do, but you can get such a self-esteem problem if you have a child that is going through school and they're getting poor grades. And I
And
tell
being
parents,
bullied.
yeah, to get bullied. And we have to think about, this is every child going to school is new. This is not something that we've always done. If you had 10 children, 100 years ago, every one of your 10 children would not have gone to school. And school is sit there hours and regurgitate. We know as adults how hard that can be. So if you have a child that cannot do that because that's not the way their brain works, and that is the that they are being forced into that, then again, different. You and I, when we would have been in school, we had a whole lot more recess time. We had a lot of outdoor time. The children now, some schools have no recess at all. And those are things that naturally help the brain to focus. If I go outside and burn energy and exercise, if I have a neurodivergent brain, I'm naturally sharper when I go into the class after I ran around. If I don't do that at all now,
And a
again,
well-balanced diet. They're not
Right.
eating
None of that. All
proper
of
food. They're
those
not doing
things.
proper food, you know?
Yeah, all of those things that we would have naturally had a bit more, I think is adding to why we're seeing so much of it now, because we're asking people to conform to the one way we do school that hasn't changed in how many years, and to conform to sit, take in information, regurgitate, sit, take in information, regurgitate. And some people are not built that way, nor should they be built that way.
Absolutely. So you've taken all of your skill set, your knowledge, your wisdom, your world travels, and you've compiled a book. Tell us a little bit about the book.
Yeah, so the book that I did, A
What's
Blueprint
that?
for Better Mental Health, what'd you say?
What's that? Let's see it.
Oh, okay. Let me grab this. Hang on. So this is the copy that says not for sale. So this is my copy, but you guys can get the book on Amazon. But it's a better blueprint for better mental health. And so the reason I created this particular book was I had clients who were coming to do treatments for depression. And the treatments that we do for the treatment resistant, they are here with us almost 40 days and 40 nights. And so it just kind of said, wow, these people are 40 days, 40 nights. They're in the wilderness of their life. And so what people would ask me was, well, Dr. Nelson, what can I do every day? So they're coming into the treatment, but they wanted something to go home to work on. So I created 40 days and 40 nights of prompts. So there's a morning prompt that will have them look at a particular coping skill, and then they will write some information about that. And then in the evening, they're sort of pre-planning or pre-paving for the next day. And I was very specific about in the evening, only giving them little three things because people try to do too much. And that again adds to anxiety. So that was why I created it for the clients. And what prompted me to bind the book was I had a client of mine who bound it herself. She took it to Staples, and it was just a printout I would give them. And she took it to Staples and she bound it. And I thought maybe I should bind it because she came in with it bound and highlighted. And so that's what I did and made it available for the rest of the world to get outside of just my patients.
Well, that's beautiful that they have a template and a resource to go back,
Yeah.
flip through, and identify. You know,
Yeah.
maybe you don't think that it's as severe as it is, or maybe it's milder than you think it is. At least this way, you're able to read it, look at it. And then take this to your doctor, your physician, and then, you know, go through the proper steps, the proper channels to get well, because that's
Yeah.
all we want, brains, is we want you well.
Yeah. And I
And I want to
wanted
ask you some.
people to have I wanted people to understand what a coping skill is. We throw out these words all the time and, you know, mental health and people say, oh, you need to learn how to cope. But most people don't even know where to
Or
start. What does
no,
that
that's
mean?
get over it.
Yeah, get over it. You know, what does that mean? So if you say somebody has great coping skills, what do they do? And again, that is going to be unique to you. So I give 40 different coping skills. And if you went through the whole book, you would highlight which ones work for you. So dancing might work for me, but it might not work for you. Deep breathing might work for you and not work for me. So you, at the end of the book, should have at least a few that work for you. And then those are your go-to coping skills. And so it is not, again, that one size fits all. That's where we get stuck. Somebody went to therapy. The therapist said, hey, do some deep breathing. It doesn't work. And then we say, it doesn't work. That's not true. It
Yeah.
just didn't work for you.
This is a hard question. I
Yeah.
just want it in general. How do you find a therapist? Because brains, I'm gonna tell you, I done checked in before. I wasn't with a psychiatrist. I went to a psychologist, but it was the best thing I ever did. And I
Yeah.
couldn't believe how well informed he was because he read me like a cheap novel. I was like, what? You know your stuff. You know me as well as I know me. But it helped me understand who I was. It helped me work through some things. It helped me cry. It helped me pat myself on the back and reward myself for effort. It is a very valuable resource. I would recommend that everybody at least once or twice. And don't just go when there's, you know, a major crisis,
Yeah.
you know?
Because ultimately, so first, so to your question about how to find a therapist. So now more than ever, There are so many more ways to do this. I mean, there are online platforms that you could do. So there's an online platform, Talk Therapy, there's BetterHelp. Those types of platforms almost match you up with a therapist like Match.com. And so you put your information in, your likes, your things, and then it will match you with a therapist. If you have commercial health care insurance, they are obligated to tell you who is covered under the plan. You can get a list of the healthcare professionals, the mental health care professionals covered under your plan. And then now with the internet, you can easily go to their websites and pick which one matches you. Now, therapy, I do tell people, is like trying on shoes. You might have to try on a couple, but you want to find the best fit. Because if the person is not a good fit to you, you won't be honest. And so you want to have some similarities potentially. So for people, if they say, I'm not comfortable talking with men, well, then you might want to get a female therapist if you have some trauma there. If certain races, you might want to get somebody who understands you culturally. You may want to get someone that you feel like you would listen to that may be a little bit older than you. A lot of people have a hard time listening to a therapist that's too much younger than them. So finding the right match, and if it doesn't fit the first time, go try another therapist. Do not give up on therapy. You just find the again the right one. But like April said, I mean, invaluable to learn about yourself from an outside perspective, because the only person in the room you can never see is yourself. So you may think you know yourself well, but if you're doing some things that are leading to results you don't like, that means you have some behaviors that you didn't program. They got programmed when you were younger. You didn't write the program. And you might need to go rewrite the program now with a therapist.
Well, let's talk about another program. Sexual identity. Lord have mercy. And I say that, and not in a disrespectful way, but folks is all over the place. Be who you are. You're not the only person that is, I mean, the transgender community. I remember my parents were very progressive when I was, ooh, maybe early late 60s, early 70s, they took me to see a movie with Sojourner Truth, which was the first transsexual, or one of the first transsexuals that was open to the queer. And I just was like, it wasn't a big deal because it was introduced to me. And this is reality. But now these babies is popping up like dandelions. People are coming up, and it is, I deal with a lot of scientists here in San Diego. It is scientifically proven that you can be born with two Ys and an X, or two Xs and a Y, or you could be a hermaphrodite and be born with both sexual organs. So for us to shun these individuals is difficult. But also the gay and lesbian community, being undercover, the only person that you're hurting is yourself or your spouse.
Well, I think you said it, at the top, is just to be yourself. And truthfully, guys, it takes you a lifetime to learn yourself. So you don't have to make any quick movements, quick decisions on labels, because you don't owe anybody that anyway. So I am not a fan of labels at all. I'm a fan of people figuring out who they are. The only label that you might want to identify with, what your name is, or something that empowers you. But sometimes these labels diminish you. They put you in a box that makes you smaller than who you are. They don't describe you well. And with our young kids who are trying to identify, I mean, to me, there's a level of insanity somewhat where you're asking five-year-olds the pronouns that they want to be called, who, give them time, give them some time to
Yeah, but
identify.
let me kind of interject right there, because society norms, we're in a whole different world now. And when a child is brought into the world, they are automatically assigned a physical component, but they don't know who they are. So you immediately put the girl in pink. You immediately give her dolls. You immediately put pigtails. You immediately, boys, you put them in a certain role. I have a friend that I thought she was very progressive, and her daughter called her on the phone and said that their grandson was painting his nails. Baby, she came up off the ground. I
I've seen that. I have
left, and I'm
seen
saying to
that parents
myself,
get upset.
okay, I've seen parents when the child has first exploring their sexuality. If you don't never touch it and you don't know what it's like, you know, oh, somebody's, you know, done something horrible. Parents, just my opinion, 61 years of experience, slow down, assess the situation, look for patterns, look for signs, seek out professional help. You know, you don't know what you don't know. And God has made us all in his image.
Right, exactly. So just, I mean, just that, just slowing down. So if you have a female child, and that child now tells you, now they're 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, and they tell you, you know, I don't want to wear this pink. I prefer to dress this way. Okay. Oh, okay. Let them just be who they are. There is no need necessarily at that point to identify this, especially with what we have happening with transgender. I mean, you have those that will tell you from the time they're 4 or 5 years old that they truly feel like they're not in the right bodies. And then you have post-puberty children who are then making those statements. And then by, you know, 18, identifying with heterosexual or homosexual. So give everybody time to figure out where that lies and letting them be themselves. So parents, I think the best thing is parents relax a little bit.
Right. Well, you know what, and I think this is something that I've noticed that's kind of sickening to me is when you think of gays or homosexuals or lesbians, the first thing people think about is how they get down, is how they have an orgasm, how they connect sexually. When your child is 5, 6, 7, they have no idea of how the unit even works. They
Right,
don't even care.
right,
It's
right.
up here. Your sexuality is between your legs. Your gender is between your ears.
Yeah. And
And
those are those things where we are really being, if you're a parent and you're in that space, you really, as a parent, really being more concerned with how it's making you feel.
right.
Let your child guide you on how it's making them feel or how they're doing. But if you are worried about how it's going to look to you, how are you going to tell your friends and family, or that's really a lot of times the concern. And again, sexuality, very different. So get and really sexuality being zero people's business
Right. Yeah,
what's
absolutely.
happening there, really. So
But people are, again, there's the stereotypes and they're trying to relive their life vicariously through their children, which is wrong. You know, but I can't tell people how to raise their family, but you don't want to cause a rift. If you love your child, yes, it's going to be difficult. It was difficult the first time I saw my daughter cross the street. Oh my goodness, I couldn't believe it. You know, when they get married, when they go off to college, these are evolutions. These are life-changing events. And what you want to do as a parent is try to support them and encourage them the best way that you can. You have been so wonderful, Dr. Crystal. I appreciate you. I appreciate the work that you're doing, especially raising the awareness in our culture and in our community, in the Black community, because it is okay to seek out and get help. We don't want the police ex have an accidental shooting because someone's having a mental illness crisis. And they have been crying out on social media all this time, and you've been ignoring them. We don't want someone that has access to medication and resources to not use them. We want you to be the best person that you could be. Please tell my brains how to get in contact with you as well as purchase a copy of the book.
So the best way for you guys to get in contact with me is to follow me on Instagram at Dr. Crystal Nelson. So at Dr. CrystalNelson at Dr. Crystal Nelson. You can also follow my Facebook page, which is Blueprint Psychiatry, where I post things there. The book, again, the book is A Blueprint for Better Mental Health, and it is on Amazon. So if you just search it on Amazon or search my name on Amazon, you guys will be able to get access to that.
Thank you so much again
You're welcome.
for what
Thank
you're
you,
doing.
April.
Brains, go check in. You know, just take a break. Just, you know, sit back, get a journal, write your thoughts, get some fresh air, get away from the device, get you some lemonade instead of a margarita, and check in with trusted professionals that care about you and that are going to take the time to help you figure it out and live your best life. Thank you so much, Dr. Crystal. I love you,
Thank you.
brains, from the bottom of my heart. You know I do.